are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
You're the problem, Justin. You're putting the expectations on these poor kids, and they can't compete. Give them a little time.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Feel like life is good. Thanks to you guys, you brought me my wishes. You guys are like the Make-A-Wish Foundation. If I'm on my way out, which every single day, you know, one day goes on, the next closer to death.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Tony just threw one of my biggest arguments in Dynasty Keeper Leagues against me on my own podcast. Bravo, sir.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Darius Austin. Darius, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing very well, thank you. I'm a little concerned that I might be called upon to sing at some point during this episode after our brief pre-show chat, but hopefully it won't come to that.
Well, you know, depends on how things go. If we need to spice things up, we're going to make you do your best Darius Rucker impersonation.
Yeah, with no Chuck Rants here, are we just going to fall back on karaoke?
That is the plan. So, joining us today is a special guest who thought he might be talking to Darius Rucker. That is Tony Cincotta of the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Tony, welcome to the show.
Oh, it's great to be here. Friends with Fantasy Benefits. You know, I started this stuff like 10 years ago. And the reason I got started is there wasn't many podcasts back in the day. And I used to listen to Baseball HQ and Baseball Prospectus. It was great information, but I couldn't last more than 30 minutes without falling asleep. So I basically decided I was going to take it to the next level, make it fun and interesting. And now you guys have gone way over the top. So I feel like I'm at home.
Well, I'm glad to have you, man. And it's being a radio show host over on Fantasy Sports Radio Network, I felt like I had to bring in some of the brethren. So that's why we're having you on. You do a lot of great stuff over at Fantasy as well as other places. So why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself and where they can find you on social media?
Yeah, so on Twitter, I'm at TheTonyCincotta, and you can join me over there. And, you know, I got a lot of polls going on. I got a lot of craziness going on there, so jump on it. I do the 11 p.m. to 3 in the morning on the East Coast show. 4 hours, I talk to myself for 4 hours. That's an amazing thing. You got to work yourself up to be a total lunatic to talk to yourself for 4 hours. And then the Lineup Lock show, which is a DFS show, 6 to 7 p.m. before the lineups kick off on Fantasy Sports Radio. And in 2 weeks, we're going to be on Dish Network and 14 million homes. So things are going really big there. Once a week, we have a fantasy golf show, No Mulligan Fantasy, that's out there. And we tackle everything in the world of sports. We got baseball, football, basketball covered, and MMA every once in a while. You never know what we'll do.
Yeah, it's amazing what you do. And I could not do 3 or 4 hours by myself on the radio. That takes a little bit of intestinal fortitude that I don't quite have yet on the radio. I had to do a couple minutes without my co-host once because he decided to go on vacation for a week, and it about made me shit my pants. So
I produced the show as well, which is kind of crazy to go and do that. I used to get so used to, back in the day, I used to work on Sirius XM since 2010, and it was such a luxury having someone push the buttons and tell me when I've been talking about donkeys for 18 minutes and I should probably get back to sports.
Well, it's nice to have a little bit more freedom over on Fantasy. So
yeah.
Let's jump in and talk about some baseball players that some are hot, some are not. I want to start with Tim Beckham, who's been pretty hot since heading over to the Baltimore Orioles via trade. So, Tony, is Tim Beckham somebody worth picking up right now?
Oh, absolutely. Here's the thing, is that I don't believe there's any such thing as quadruple A players, which a lot of people will say, guys that can't make it in the majors but excel at triple A. Tim Beckham was the first pick overall in the Major League Baseball draft. What happens with guys like Beckham is they don't get an opportunity to play every day at the Major League level for 2-3 months at a time. If they did, they would come. Nelson Cruz dealt with this his whole career until he was 27 years old. Then the Texas Rangers decided just to leave him in the outfield. Let's see what he got, and bang, the guy's a superstar. I think the same thing's happening here with Tim Beckham. The Tampa Bay Rays made a huge mistake moving this kid instead of Brad Miller, and he's in the right ballpark for great offense. I would love this kid in a dynasty league. I think in the next 6-7 years, he'll be a top 5 or 6 shortstop.
Wow. Darius, what are your thoughts on Beckham?
Yeah, I'm nowhere near as optimistic, but that would be quite hard, I think. I do like that he's playing every day. It's a great landing spot. They've batted him 5th or 6th every day since he turned up. Remains to be seen what happens when JJ Hardy comes back, which I think is next week. He is terrible now, but he's also been on the Orioles forever, and basically he's always had an everyday role when he's been healthy, so we'll see how that shakes out. The strikeout rate concerns me a lot. He's over 30% for the season. He's very aggressive. I think he can crush any fastball you want. I'm not sure his pitch recognition is great. He's been particularly bad against changeups this year. And I think if he falls behind, he's kind of done. So I think that's very kind of conditional. His count is basically makes or breaks whether his at bat is going to turn out almost in the first or second pitch. So there are a lot of holes there, but I also think we're in a league that is a lot more tolerant of these high strikeout rates.
I was going to ask you, Darius. Yeah, I was going to ask you, what's the problem with strikeouts nowadays? It doesn't seem to matter, right? I mean, guys that have struck out more than him, Jonathan Villar, Aaron Judge, Chris Davis, Miguel Sano, Trevor Story. I don't see anyone trying to get rid of them.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, if he's got enough power to play, and then I think he'll stick around, because 30% certainly isn't the hurdle it used to be for major league teams. So I have a few questions about the batting average based on that, and kind of how he's dealt with off-speed stuff. But right now he's playing every day. He's hitting for power. He hasn't been great on the base paths, but he's chipped in a little bit of speed. So I think while he's playing, you've got to ride him and see how this shakes out.
I have to be honest, I haven't seen him since coming over to Baltimore, but if he can play passable defense, I think that might be just enough to kind of pass over J.J. Hardy on the depth chart, who's pretty much a shell of his former self. I'm not as high on him as Tony either, but I love the boldness of the call, because, I mean, he is a guy who's got power in his bat. He's got 15 home runs this year, 3 of them since coming over from Baltimore. He's hitting a cool 500 in the week that he's been in Baltimore. Obviously, that's not going to sustain itself. But if he can hit 270 rest of the way and continue to hit bombs and steal some bags, I think he's got some sneaky value in deeper formats. You know, he's always going to be a risk to be sat, because he does just strike out way too much. I mean, I think he's striking out like, or swinging and missing like 35% outside the zone, so that is not very good. But I think with the Baltimore Stadium and what he can do power wise, I don't think there's any reason not to buy him over a guy like Hardy. So I think he's got a role moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, if you isolate the shortstop position, there isn't much there. You got Corey Seager, which he's not going to match. Carlos Correa, which he won't match. Francisco Lindor, which he won't match. A lot of people look at a guy like Xander Bogaerts, think he's a fine shortstop. The guy's got 6 home runs. In today's baseball, 119 players walked around with 20 home runs last year. So Xander Bogaerts, if he's going to cost you in the power territory, how much is he fantasy-wise? Going down, Addison Russell hasn't lived up to expectations. Trevor Story, I talked about, 36% strikeout rate, 225. There ain't 7 good shortstops in fantasy baseball.
I think it's a little bit deeper than that, but I give you that point. I do think long-term it becomes better at the position with guys like Ahmed Rosario coming up, Gleyber Torres eventually, you know, guys like Franklin Barreto. I think it's going to be a deeper position than what we're used to in the future, but
Let me ask a question. Would you say you're a little bit overweight?
Me? I am way too overweight.
Do you smoke?
I do smoke.
Well, why are you touting guys that like 4 or 5 years from now are probably going to be pretty good? Because we better live for today based on your current health and the condition. I want to live for today. And right now, those guys don't even play in Major League Baseball. Live for today, Justin. Tomorrow ain't promised.
Tony just threw one of my biggest arguments in dynasty keeper leagues against me on my own podcast. Bravo, sir.
Thank you.
let's move on and talk about Steven Matz, who's been a guy that people have really liked in the past. A lot of people really high on him coming into the year. Has not had the kind of year you would expect from where you paid draft-wise. Darius, I know you wanted to talk about it a little bit, so why don't you go ahead and talk about your thoughts on Steven Matz?
Yeah, it looks like he's leaving everything up to me. There's a lot just right down the middle of the plate. I watched a bunch of his clips of his starts, and everything is just kind of sitting there for hitters to launch it. There's no real deception on it. He doesn't seem to be getting over the ball very well, and everything he's leaving out over the middle of the plate is just getting crushed. I think he's been a little bit unlucky, but I still don't think the performance has been great. I think he's still pitched by a well below average pitcher this year. And I'm not sure he has three good pitches at the moment. The change is still good when he gets it in the right spot, but I think the sinker is getting crushed a lot. And I wonder in the flyball revolution zone with all these guys doing the uppercut swing thing, whether that's kind of right in the wheelhouse of a lot of those players who are just swinging for power now. But it just doesn't seem to have come together at all for him. And I think the other thing that concerns me is that he's gone well away from the slider. And I think there's been some murmurings that he's done that for health reasons. But that was one of his best pitches in his arsenal. And I think the rest of it looks pretty ordinary to me without it. So I have a lot of concerns. And I think if he can get back to using that slider and still stay healthy, then that would be ideal for me. But right now, he seems pretty much unusable.
Tony, what are your thoughts on Matz? Is he a guy that's usable for you?
No, Darius hit it right on the head, right? He's a guy that I don't think that's going out there and pitching till his full execution, and it's because of the injury situation. That slider at 3.4% this season, he can't get by. He's not even trying to become a better pitcher at this point. He's just trying to take the hill every fifth day. So I think next year is the year where we'll get Steven Matz maybe on a little bit of a discount because people look at this year's numbers and give up on him, and that's when you jump in. I mean, he's throwing a curveball almost 25% of the time. He's giving up on a slider. There's surely health concerns here with this kid.
Yeah, the lack of slider usage for me is a really big concern. It's something I mentioned earlier when he came back from injury. Earlier this season, back in June and July, it hasn't really gotten better. He had one start where he threw it 20% of the time, but since then he's thrown it. He's either not thrown it at all in two games, and then the other two games he's thrown it 3% of the time and 5.9% of the time. So, I mean, you're talking about just extremely low usages. It's bearing out in the stuff. It's not a good sign right now for Steven Matz. Either he's trying to prevent himself from getting injured, or he is still injured. And either way, you don't want that on your fantasy team moving forward. So I'm completely out on Steven Matz. Let's talk about Ian Kinsler, another guy, Darius, you wanted to talk about. But he has not had an amazing season, much like the Tigers. Definitely a huge letdown from where you drafted him in terms of looking at his statistics from last year. Tony, what are your thoughts on Kinsler? Is he kind of done?
You know what? I've given up on this kid before, and he absolutely defied me last year. We're looking at a kid 35 years age, second base. He's not going to steal bases. He plays in a pretty good pitcher's ballpark there. So I don't think he's done, but you probably can find better guys out there. 28 home runs, 14 stolen bases just a year ago. And then you look at this year, even though he only has the 10 home runs, he still has 8 stolen bases. So the middle of that infield, it would be hard to go out in a waiver wire and replace him. You know, you're at a point this time in the league where a lot of leagues, the trading deadline's done or it's just coming up now. I think he's still a serviceable player, but not what he was last year. And probably next year, a guy I'm giving up on.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Kinsler?
Yeah, I mean, I think the approach is still great. He still makes a ton of contact. He walks almost as often as he strikes out. But the concern for me is he's not pulling the ball at all, and that's where almost all of his power has been historically. This is the lowest pull percentage of his career. He seems to be going the other way a lot more, and I think that's partly because pitchers are pitching him outside more, and he's got no power on the outer third of the zone. So I think as long as they continue that approach and keep it away from inside where he can sometimes get it out, then I think he's going to be fairly limited for power. And I think that does mean he's a fairly unexciting option. Tony mentioned the speed, and that's been pretty scarce this year. So I think it does make it difficult to kind of give up on him overall. But I think this is a guy in his mid-30s who's probably declining a little bit with the bat speed, and he doesn't really have the power to the other field anyway. So As long as he's not going to get those pitches inside to hit, then I think he's kind of going to settle in as a fairly low-end option. And he's always been very dependable, but we've seen these kind of swings back and forth between the high-end like we got in 2016 when I think he got lucky with a few extra homers going out. Well, and now I'm not sure there'll be another peak, given how late it is in his career.
That's the problem is, if you really look at it, last year ended up being an outlier, right? Because 2013, he had 13 home runs, then 17, 2014, then 11, and now he's back at 10. And you look at it and say, man, this came out of nowhere. And last year was a year that he actually had less walks at 6%. He struck out more than ever at 28%. It definitely showed a guy that maybe was pulling the ball more, but it was truly an outlier. And he's really just a double-digit home run guy now and a double-digit stolen bases.
Yeah, and I think that's something we've got to kind of look at going forward. I think the average will rebound next year. A guy who makes as much contact as he does should hit for a bit higher average. And, I mean, he's getting kind of crushed in the BABIP department with a 259 BABIP, kind of pulling down that 245 average. I agree. I don't think we can expect the same kind of power numbers that we saw last year. I think Tony's totally right. I think that was an outlier. He should hit more than 10 typically, but 28 was obviously just a dream season put together, and you cashed in on 14 stolen bases. His stolen base efficiency isn't great either. He's been caught a third of the time running. He's 8 for 12 so far this year. So if I was going to project for next year, I'd say maybe he's like a 13-10 guy with a 260, 270 average, which is usable at the second base position, because I actually think second base may be a tad bit light, comparatively speaking, to where we've been the last couple years. And if the three-sport draft that I'm doing right now is any indication, we are in like the 35th round of a 50-round draft, and he is still on the board. So I think maybe you will get quite a huge discount considering his age, considering the year he's put up next year. But he's also not a guy that's probably worth using outside of maybe 15-team leagues, your second base or middle infield options. So probably not going to be 12-team worthy next year.
Very sad.
Yeah. I've loved him for a long time, and I definitely benefited last year on him. This year I couldn't buy in on the price, and I'm glad I didn't. Luis Castillo is kind of being a hot name floated around and talked about within the industry, mainly because last month he had the highest average fastball velocity and since coming up for the Reds. So, Darius, what are your thoughts on Luis Castillo moving forward?
Yeah, this looks like a pretty interesting guy to me. I mean, we're still talking barely 50 major league innings, so obviously the sample size is small, and you don't love the setting in Cincinnati, but the fastball is pretty legit. I think he can run up to 100. He's sitting 96, 97 with ease. He's been decent at getting into games. He's gone at least five innings every single one of his starts, and he's gone six or more in five of his last six. I think the changeup looks pretty good so far. He's got over 20% whiff rate on that, and he's striking out almost a quarter of all the batters he's faced. So everything so far looks really nice to me, and he's even mixed in a sinker lately, and he's run his ground ball percentage up to nearly 60%. So there's a lot of really nice components here, and it's still early days, but I think there was some question whether he would be like a back-end guy or a reliever, or whether he could make something more out of his arsenal, and so far everything looks extremely promising to me.
Tony, what are your thoughts on Castillo?
I think Darius hit it right. He actually, it's amazing to me. He developed a pitch at the major league level that has actually made him a better pitcher at the major league level than the minors. That 60% ground ball rate, which he's approaching, is great when you talk about a guy throwing the ball 100 miles an hour with a K rate of 9.11. But just like everybody else, the walk rate is too high. But you look at the minor league level, right? 43 innings. He pitched at rookie ball, 2.89 walks. Then he pitched 117 innings, 1.38 walks. Those walks will correct himself. I think this kid's a pretty good pitcher. The only negative I have is the ballpark there, and there's nothing you can do about it. And guys have pitched well in Cincinnati before. I mean, Johnny Cueto made a lot of money pitching in Cincinnati. I think this kid's going to be a decent pitcher.
I think he is going to be one of those guys that frustrates the hell out of you. But you look at the skills and you get kind of tantalized that this could be a really kind of elite guy. the fastball is 97 miles an hour, but it is like straight as an arrow. I think that may cause problems for him sometimes in that bandbox in Cincinnati. But I love the fact that he's got two good pitches outside of the 97 mile an hour fastball. So I think he's definitely a guy worth gambling on rest of the way and going into next season, because I don't think the price is an exorbitant at all. So he's a guy that I definitely, if he starts getting a ton of publicity, if people really start hyping him as a sleeper next year, I'll probably jump off the bandwagon. But if he can, if he goes for cheap, he's definitely a guy I'm willing to take a gamble on in 15-team mix and even NL only. Like I said, as long as the price doesn't get out of control, because I do think that fastball is going to get hit at times with guys who can catch up to 97. Let's go ahead and move on and talk about Manuel Margot, who started off slow, then dealt with some injuries, but is starting to turn things around. This was a top kind of trendy pick for NL Rookie of the Year, and obviously Bellinger has run away with that. But Margot's putting up some decent numbers, especially for the fantasy side. So, Tony, what are your thoughts on Manuel Margot?
Oh, my God. There wasn't a more hyped guy coming into this year than this kid. At 22 years old, you're right. He started out slow, and he's putting together a decent season, right? I think the expectations were too high. In just 342 at-bats, we got double-digit home run. We're going to have double-digit home runs, probably get close to 20 stolen bases at season's end. I think the kid's a decent player. Can he steal 30 bases, which we're looking for when we drafted this kid? I don't know. You look at a lot of these guys like Jock Peterson, right? Trevor Story. It is so easy to steal bases at the minor league level. That's what separates minor league pitchers from major league pitchers, is that they go down and they don't have the fundamentals and they don't hold runners on. And it's so easy to steal bases. I think this kid's going to be a 20 stolen base guy instead of these 30 stolen base seasons that we've seen. And if you expect that kind of output, I don't think we're ever going to get there. I think we're also going to see a little light on the power. We're going to look at 15, 18 home runs and have a good batting average. I think he's a good player, but I thought the expectations are out of whack.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Margot?
Yeah, the speed is a question for me, and he's obviously attempted a bunch and not been super successful yet. And I kind of thinking along Tony's lines that maybe right now, certainly based on how he's been running, 30 does seem kind of out of reach. We know he's fast. You can see he's fast on the base paths. You can see he's fast in the outfield. I don't think his foot speed itself is the problem, but unless he learns a bit more about stealing off major league pitches, I don't think he's going to get there, even though Andy Green's certainly happy to let players run a lot. The speed obviously helps with things like his average. He's got 11 infield hits already this year. I think he'll run an above average BABIP. So I think that will be okay. And I think the power is a bit better than we expected. I don't know that I buy the pace that he's on, but I think he was kind of touted as somebody who might struggle to hit double digits at any point in his career. And I think he's probably dispelled that notion a little bit. So, I think he's a useful player, but I do worry that people are going to overpay a bit for him based on a 30-plus steal guy, and I still need to see him display the skills to do that, because there's a whole lot more to stealing bases than just being quick.
Yeah, it's really hard to be a 30-plus stolen base guy when you don't walk. And one of my issues with Margot is since the beginning of July, he's put up pretty good numbers. He's hitting 271. He's got 5 home runs, 4 stolen bases, and hasn't been caught in that period, too. But he's posted a 2.4% walk rate. And if you're going to be kind of a speed guy, I want to see you be able to get on base even when you struggle, because this is a guy that could struggle with strikeouts at points. And so that's my biggest fear, is the fact that he's never going to get on base enough. Right now, I mean, for the season, he's got a 308 OBP. But since he's under 300 since that kind of July 1st turnaround. And that, to me, spells kind of bad things for Margot. I think he needs to learn to become a little bit more patient. And if that's not in his game, I think he's always going to be kind of inconsistent, and it's going to limit his ceiling. He's not Billy Hamilton. You know, he can't get away with a 5% walk rate and still steal you 40, 50 bags. So I think he's a guy that is interesting, and I would ride the hot streak rest of the way, but I think he's also a guy that is going to struggle mightily at times, like we saw early in this season throughout his career. because he's not going to get on base enough to be super reliable in the stolen base department. Let's talk about Dylan Bundy, because Dylan Bundy has had an interesting career as a professional, ranging back from being one of the top prospects in baseball to being completely forgotten about, and is starting to really put things together this year. So, Tony, what are your thoughts on Dylan Bundy?
I love this. I love this guy. I'm glad he brought it up, because it's interesting, right? We thought this guy was going to be the next coming, and he was going to be the guy at Baltimore. He's going to win Cy Young's. He was the fourth pick in the draft, and then all of a sudden, Dylan Bundy's not even thought about. He's 24 years of age. Like, we don't give these kids any time in a row, like you, you know, trying to bring me Ahmed Rosario and every other minor leaguer. You're the problem, Justin. You're putting the expectations on these poor kids, and they can't compete. Give them a little time. I like this kid, but the K rate is bothering me a little at 7.17. But when I look at what he's done in the last month, 2 months, I think this kid's only getting better, and I think that K rate's going to come up, and I think we could have an ERA next season of under 4. I don't think he'll be a great pitcher, but certainly plausible. I would look at him as a starting pitcher 4 or 5 next season for fantasy rosters. And you look at that and say, well, that's nothing great. You think about where he was last year, you weren't even drafting him.
Yeah. Darius, what are your thoughts on Bundy?
Yeah, well, he's now 25 innings over his previous professional career high, which I guess cuts two ways. He has been healthy for that long. And also, I'm not sure how much more you're going to get out of him the rest of the way, because I don't know whether the Orioles are going to push him that hard for someone who's had so many injury concerns over the course of his career. He's had some really nice starts this year, and he's had some really horrible starts this year. And I think one really big problem he's still got that would probably make me hesitant to draft him is that he's not been able to deal with lefties. They're slashing .256, .328, .472 against him this year, which is pretty horrific. And I think lineups with a lot of good lefties in, I think he's going to really struggle with them going forward. So if you want to spot start him, I would stay away from good left-handed lineups. And I think he can certainly be an average-ish number 4, number 5 guy. But I worry about the health, and I worry that he's not going to iron those platoon issues out enough to be anything more than that.
Let me ask you a question. Who do you think has a better career, Bundy or Trevor Bauer?
In what regard? ERA? Probably Bundy.
Probably Bundy. What about as a pitcher? A fantasy roster, 5 categories. Who's a better pitcher?
I think I would take Bauer, but, oh, God. You know what? I'm going to take Bundy, because I think at some point Bauer could get moved into the bullpen. And I don't think necessarily that's going to happen for Bundy. So I think I would take Bundy long term. But, man, Bauer for me is just one of those guys that I have a hard time quitting, because the strikeout stuff is there and the talent is there. He just can't seem to put it all together on the field. So he's one of those. Matthew Berry used to talk about guys who are fantasy kryptonite. Trevor Bauer's always been that guy for me.
Who's Matthew Berry?
He's kind of a lesser known fantasy analyst. Works for a 4-letter network, I think it's called.
I got him confused with that Crocodile Dundee screenwriter, Matthew Berry.
That guy. Yeah, he's been trying his hand at fantasy stuff for a little while. he might be doing okay.
I remember when he used to be young and energetic and did more than just football.
Yeah. Well, I mean, not everybody can hang with guys like us, especially guys like you who do so many sports.
He's weighed down because he's got all that money in his pocket. He's doing a good job. Thank God for Matthew Berry, or none of us would have a job.
This is true. let's move on and talk about Manny Machado, who has had a very un-Manny Machado-like season. Really disappointing fantasy owners who took him, most people who took him kind of the first half of the first round. What can we expect rest of the season, and then looking on into next year, where would you take him, Tony?
This is a crazy situation, right? Because this kid's got all the talent in the world. I was anti-Manny Machado coming into this year, because Manny Machado is a resident of the United States and didn't play for us in the World Baseball Classic. So I was hoping for ill will for Manny Machado. He went and played for the Dominican Republic, and I was really, campaigning for his downfall. I called him a traitor, and I wanted him ostracized from the United States. But as a fantasy player, you got to just chalk it up to a guy that's had a couple injuries, right? Hasn't played a whole season, and we see glimpses of what he's going to be. And again, 25 years of age, I don't want to give up on this guy. I think I would just write off this year. And I would have the same expectations I had coming into this season and hope he puts it all together. My one concern is, though, the Baltimore Orioles, it seemed like, was taking trade offers for him at the deadline, if you believe everything you read. And if the Orioles know something that's happening here, I wonder what the heck is going on. We're looking at a kid in 2015 that stole 20 bases. I thought the stolen bases were going to be obsolete because of the leg injuries that he suffered. But he doesn't strike out a ton in today's standards, 17%. He's got a guy that can walk. I just look at this as a bad season with everything going wrong, and he'll be back next year hitting 280, hitting 30 home runs. I don't think the stolen bases are going to be there anymore. So I'll go back and hopefully get a discount on him next season.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Machado?
Well, I think maybe part of Machado's problem, certainly earlier in the season, was that he sort of relies so much on his talent with his bat speed and control that he was making incredibly bad decisions at what to swing at. And I think he's been a lot more selective in the second half. He's not chasing anything up and away like he was in the first half. And he's got a 903 OPS since the All-Star break. And he's hitting 343 in that time. That obviously won't continue, but I think the approach has improved enough where I think he's kind of realized he had to make some changes. And you do kind of see him almost hit accidental opposite field home runs sometimes because the bat speed is so great and he gets so much power on the ball that even when he's not trying to hit it the other way, it still ends up flying out. So I think the talent is still incredible. I don't think there's anything gone away. And I think there was just some simple bad luck going on in the first half as well, and that kind of combined with the bad decision making to make it a pretty disappointing first half for a player of his caliber. So I think he's fine. I think he'll be good the rest of the way. And I think, you know, he's still incredibly young and it was just not making the best decisions at the plate that he could have done. And I think that will improve over time. And I think we can look forward to several more years of him being one of the best hitters in fantasy.
Yeah, I agree with you guys. I think this is just kind of a blip in the radar. It's a bad first half that has kind of crushed his season, where he hit 230 in the first half. Like Darius mentioned, hitting 343 in the second half so far. He's got six home runs since July 1st, and things are really starting to turn around for him. The majority of his underlying metrics are just about in line with his career average, and I mean, considering he stole zero bases last year after stealing 20, like Tony mentioned, 2 years ago, and the fact he's got six this year means at least he may chip in a handful of stolen bases year to year, and that help definitely helps. You know, the only thing that for me that really kind of sucks is he's going to lose shortstop eligibility. He's played all of his games at third base this year, so he's going to lose the shortstop eligibility. Third base is extremely deep, so it's going to be hard to rationalize taking him near as early as he went this year, though obviously he'll come at some sort of discount. To me, I just don't know how much of a discount he gets considering the name value. So if he's going in the third round next year, I'm going to be jumping all over it, but I got a feeling he's probably going to still go in the second round next year. And that to me seems pretty much like fair value moving forward. Let's talk about another guy who's been disappointing this year. Every time you think that Carlos Carrasco is starting to put it together, he goes out and just gets lit the fuck up. And this last week was there was no difference. Got creamed by the Yankees on Sunday. So Darius, what are your thoughts on Carrasco rest this year and then moving on into the future?
The big concern I've got Carrasco, kind of digging into his numbers, is that I just don't think his fastball is that good. And so I think when he gets ahead in the count, the change is really good. The slider is incredible. He's just crushing guys. They're just not able to do anything against him. If he's in a favorable count, then it's game over. But on the flip side, if they can sit fastball, I think it's extremely hittable. He's got a 355 batting average against the pitch, slug 692 slugging this season. I looked at his Statcast expected WOBA. It's 451. So while his actual is 417, it's even worse. He's been one of the worst starters in all of baseball for that. And basically, Austin Bibbins-Dirks was the only regular starter who'd got a worse one. He's worse than James Shields with his fastball, which is just horrendous to think about. I don't think there's enough movement there. The velocity's fine, but it's not going to blow anybody away in the big leagues. So I think if he's going to be falling behind in counts a bit more, and he has been this year, then I think the starts are going to go badly for him. And I don't know if there's an easy fix on that one. The secondary stuff is so great that you kind of see this excellent number one ace type guy in there. But I think unless that fastball improves, he's never going to quite live up to the potential that we can see.
Tony, what are your thoughts on Carrasco?
This is, guys, tough because you love the strikeout rate, right? And you put that in your lineup and you think the rest will follow. And last year, it did fall with a 3.32 ERA, but there were certainly numbers out there to indicate that it was a little bit lucky there. But in 2015, it was the opposite, right? We looked at a guy with a 10.58, and then the FIP was at 2.84 and a 2.66. He's all over the place. There's no consistency, and that's the key to being a great pitcher. And that's the problem with him being – he'll always be a good pitcher, but he's never going to be one of these elite guys because there's no consistency to his game. There's no consistency with three-plus pitches each and every time out there. So you always get one guy, it looks like Darvish this year, right? If you look at Darvish game by game, it's always one inning where it gets away from him. And I think that Carrasco is the same way.
Yeah, I've been a big Carrasco guy for a long time, and I'm really kind of kicking myself for taking him in this three-sport draft because he's going to be my number two or number three starting pitcher next year. And that feels like a mistake the more and more I dig into the numbers. But, I look at the slider, I look at some of the other pitches, and I get really tantalized by him. But I did not realize how bad the pitch values were on his fastball. I mean, they're absolutely atrocious. And so I think Darius has brought up a really good point that unless that fastball improves, he figures out a way to maybe, change the grip on it a tad, try to get a little bit more movement, he's probably going to continue to struggle and have these outings that are that are pretty ugly. Because for the most part, I mean, when he pitches well, he's awesome, and then he has these blow-up starts that absolutely kill you. I mean, he's got, one, two, three, four, five starts this year where he's given up five earned runs or less. I mean, if you could take those starts away, that'd be great. And, maybe you would have gotten away with not playing him, at Boston or versus New York this last week. Maybe you just decided, you weren't going to run him out there for that two-start week, but I doubt it. But how are you going to get past the one at Texas when Texas was struggling or the one at Oakland? Because, obviously you're starting guys, your studs against Oakland or against Cincinnati or against Kansas City. So, it's not like you could have avoided a lot of these blow-up starts. He's pitched a little bit better, pitched a little bit better than maybe his ERA has shown. 3.67 FIP, 3.57 xFIP, but definitely not where you drafted him because more than likely you took him unless you took him right after the kind of the injury scare that happened in the preseason, you probably draft him as your number two starting pitcher. So, God, I hate it, but I think I'm starting to fade a little bit on Carlos Carrasco. Let's move on and talk about Ben Revere, who's been very hot as of late and maybe help some people out with their head-to-head matchups in the playoffs down the stretch, or if you need some kind of cheap speed. Tony, are you buying in on Ben Revere at all?
Yeah, hell. You can't get stolen bases, man. I'm in a league where it's a 14-team league, 15-team league, and I try to trade for the first, 16 guys in the stolen base column, and I couldn't get anything for a deal done. So I think stolen bases are hot right now, and when you can get a guy like a Ben Revere and have him in your roster, yeah, you can use him and throw him out there. But to me, it's a one commodity thing. If you're playing in a head-to-head league, I wouldn't even waste my time on stolen bases, but that's a whole different show. What I would try to do, if I'm in a roto-style league, I got this guy, I'll throw him in there. But it's really one-dimensional. But at this time of the season, what you're looking at is categories, right? So you're looking, if I can make up 4 or 5 points in stolen bases, I throw him out there. But if I'm in there and I have 82 stolen bases – and the team behind me has 68, and the team ahead of me has 93, there's no sense having Ben Revere on your roster. So I think it all comes down to league format, and it all comes down to standings.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Revere?
I think it really depends on Cameron Maybin and how quickly he gets hurt again, to be honest, because I think since he came back, the Angels seem to want to play him, and you know he's a better baseball player than Ben Revere is, so you can't blame them for that. Obviously, he's not displacing Mike Trout, and Cole Calhoun has kind of turned things around a bit, so I think that outfield is full for the moment, and unless Maybin gets himself hurt again, which certainly wouldn't be the biggest surprise in the world, I just don't think he's going to play regularly enough. And I kind of had a look. He hasn't really been a great pinch runner in his career either. He's not stolen a ton of bases when he's come in. His rate is actually lower than when he's been a starter. So I don't know if he doesn't like pinch running. He only has 2 pinch run stolen bases in his career, just 6 as a sub. So I don't think he's really the kind of guy you can put on your bench and hope that the Angels bring him in one of those spots, because I think the chances of that playing out are just so small. So yeah, if Cameron Maybin, you know, picks up another niggle or goes back on the DL, then I can see him, you know, kind of having another one of these streaks like he just had recently and pushing you over the edge in stolen bases. But outside of that, I don't think there's anything here. And there's always the chance that Maybin doesn't get hurt for the next 6 weeks, and then you're just stuck with Ben Revere getting a couple of plate appearances a week on your bench.
Yeah, you know your career is pretty much at the end when you're getting sat in favor of Cole Calhoun, who's been absolutely awful this season, hasn't hit a home run in the last like 12 games or stolen a base. I mean, he's hitting .239. So, I mean, if you're getting sat for that, then you probably don't have a ton of value. If Cameron Maybin was to get hurt, I think you would be an interesting guy. But you know, who knows? That could happen at any moment. But, yeah, unfortunately, Cameron Maybin's back, and the Angels are going to run him out there as much as possible. So I think Revere gets kind of lost in the shuffle. But keep an eye on Maybin. Maybin's a guy who could get hurt tying his shoelaces. So if that happens, then Revere is definitely worth a pickup in any league you need stolen bases in.
Yeah, Revere's in the lineup today, so maybe Cameron, I had slept wrong last night.
It can happen. I mean, you know, he breathes too hard. He breaks a rib. So let's move on to Dallas Keuchel, who has put up overall an amazing season, kind of Dallas Keuchel of 2014, 2015. He got shellacked, though, this last weekend. So rest of the season, Tony, which Dallas Keuchel are you going to see, and then where would you take him next year?
I ain't going to see him at all the rest of the season, to tell you the truth. If I had this guy and there's a trade deal, you got to get rid of this guy. He's coming back, and he's looked terrible since coming back from this injury. I'm really concerned about this. I actually asked people on Twitter last night, do you think the Houston Astros are a favorite to win the American League? Because I don't see it with this pitching staff. I think they have the best lineup, no doubt about it, 1-9. But this Dallas Keuchel ripped the management for not going out and making a trade at the deadline to improve their roster. And I think he's concerned about himself. I think he's concerned about this whole team. And I don't like what I'm seeing from him coming back. Now, I think Dallas Keuchel's a guy that I'll never have on any of my teams, to be honest with you, because he puts up some decent numbers, elite stuff. I mean, the stuff that you could win a Cy Young with, right? But yet he doesn't have the strikeout rates of an elite pitcher. The ERA is good. The whip's good. But if you don't have the strikeout rate and you don't have saves because he's a starting pitcher, now I'm down to 3 out of 5 categories.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Keuchel?
Yeah, I think the thing that you look for with Keuchel is whether he's got that command just below the zone in that kind of uncertain area where batters feel like they need to swing at it and actually it's not really a hittable pitch. And since he came back off the DL, he has not had that at all. He's been leaving things up in the zone. This disaster start was against the White Sox, which you must have been sitting there thinking, oh, good, Dallas Keuchel can get back on track against the White Sox, and they destroyed him. So that was just brutal. He's had 8 walks to 7 strikeouts since he came back. He's given up a homer in each start. The command is not there. He says he's healthy. I don't know if he's actually healthy. Maybe he's healthy, but this whole pinched nerve thing has kind of thrown off his mechanics a bit, and he needs to find them again. But we saw this last year when he doesn't feel right, and the command's not there, he's, you know, just not good enough stuff to get away with it. And so I think we need to see that come back. And as long as that's kind of missing and we haven't seen any evidence that it's back since he came off the DL, then I'm not sure that you can really use him. And so maybe this pushes his value down next year to the point where you kind of get the bargain again. And he can come back into 2018 with a healthy neck, and he'll get that command back. But right now, it doesn't seem to be there for me. And I kind of agree with Tony on the Astros. The lineup is so good, but the rotation is starting to look pretty bad, with Keuchel and McCullers looking like they're not really going to be 100% the rest of the way.
Yeah, I mean, with the Astros' lead in the division and for home field advantage in the American League, you think that maybe there is another DL stint coming for Keuchel, because they need him to be right if they're going to compete in the playoffs. And they're dealing with a lot of injuries to a lot of key pieces right now. I mean, McCullers on the DL, Correa's hurt, Keuchel obviously isn't right. And so you got to wonder how much he's actually going to pitch the rest of this regular season with a 14-game lead over the Mariners in the division and a 7.5-game lead over Boston for the best record in the AL. So I'm really worried about Keuchel too. He just doesn't look right. The control is not there at all. And to Tony's point, he's never been a strikeout guy anyways. And so for me, he's going into next year, he always just goes higher than I'm willing to take him, because if I'm going to take a pitcher high, I want elite strikeouts, and that's just not the kind of thing you get from Dallas Keuchel. And when he is bad, when he's hurt, he's really, really bad. He crushes you. And so I'm completely out for this year and next year again on Dallas Keuchel. All right. That is going to wrap us up for this episode. Tony, thank you for joining us.
Oh, this has been my dream come true. Like, I spent my whole life thinking about, imagine if I could get on a podcast at 3:00 in the afternoon and eat some chicken before it and talk baseball with two guys, one guy in another country. That's when I know life is good. And I feel like life is good thanks to you guys. You brought me my wishes. You guys are like the Make-A-Wish Foundation. If I'm on my way out, which every single day, one day goes on, the next day goes on, we're closer to death, and you guys granted my wish, so thank you. And the Make-A-Wish Foundation, I want to thank them for granting my wish, and everybody out there.
Well, we're glad we could oblige. What do you get and remind people where they can hear you on Fantasy Sports Radio, and then where people can reach you on social media?
Yeah, you can hit me on Twitter, @TheTonySincotta, and you can check me out on Fantasy Sports Radio, FNTSY.com/radio, from 6 to 7 p.m. We're on there. You can also hear us on Daily Roto. It's broadcasted live, American Forces Radio, Sports Byline, and then we're going to be on Dish Network starting, I think, August 17th. Which should be 14 million homes. I believe it's channel 266. We're going to be on Dish Network going forward. And then 11 p.m. to 3 a.m., I do a little fantasy baseball until all the games are over, and then I switch it over to fantasy football for the Fantasy Sports News Desk, which you can get on iTunes or Google Play if you can't stay up to 11 p.m. to 3 a.m. in the morning. It's out there. All 4 hours are broken up an hour apiece, so read the description, feel what you want, and go out there and grab it.
Definitely got to do that. Darius, why don't you tell people what you're working on, where you can reach?
As you can find me on Twitter @DariusA64. I had an FWFP piece up this week looking at some pretty sparsely owned guys, including Luis Castillo, for kind of, cheap guys to pick up for the stretch run. So check out that. I also had a piece at BP Wrigleyville looking at Justin Wilson, because the Cubs have obviously just picked him up. And plenty of stuff going on at Batflips and Nerds now, including the guys I wasn't on, but they did their first live episode with a bit of Q&A last night. So if you're interested in the British fans' perspective on baseball, then go to batflipsandnerds.com and check that out as well.
And you can reach me on Twitter @JustinMasonFWFB. Email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. You can read everything I write over at FanGraphs, where I write 4 to 5 times a week, or on Friends of Fantasy Benefits, where I write whenever I feel like it. You can also hear me on this podcast 3 days a week, on the football podcast 2 days a week, and on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network Thursdays from 9 to 11 Eastern, 6 to 8 Pacific, for the Tout Wars Hour with Laura Michaels. Saris is going to be our guest this week, as well as maybe Sammy Reed for some football talk, because I've got the barf League draft happening this Saturday for football in San Francisco against industry vets like Lore Michaels, Ray Flowers, Howard Bender, Sammy Reed, and others. So if you're interested in football, definitely follow along that this week as I live tweet embarrassing pictures of people in the industry. All right, that is going to wrap us up for this episode. For Darius, Tony, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season. Every night I get you on the telephone. We sleep and we talk and we play till the dawn. Trying to get a handle on who we are. Sleep all night with the phone off the hook. Fall.